The Off the Ball Podcast Network. Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
New Zealand 46, Ireland 14. That's how it finished in Tokyo on Saturday morning. Ireland out of the World Cup at the quarterfinal stage yet again. We had Matty Williams on just before 8 o'clock here on the show, and I'm delighted to say joining us now to go through that defeat and its ramifications and all the rest of it is former Ireland hooker Keith Wood. Keith, we've come dressed pretty much identically for tonight as well, which I'm viewing as a positive.
I tell you, it's amazing when we get the dress code right, you know, Richie. I'm missing the glasses. It's very hard for me to get into to go over the bridge of my nose, but sure, look, such is life.
To be fair, Keith, they're a new addition. You didn't get the memo in time. It's fine. We'll move past it and try and crack on as best we can. Listen, you've had a couple of days to ruminate on things now. What's your opinion on how things went down on Saturday?
Yeah, I don't know that it's much at all. As I looked at it again for another while and then had to give up watching it because... It was just incredibly hard to watch. It was hard to watch the first time. I just couldn't quite face it to watch it the second time. When I look back on it, I think we were pretty much hoping that there was a big performance going to come. Not anything new. I mean, we talked about it in the roadshow last week. Both Brian and I didn't think there was anything new being kept back in particular, but we thought we'd have a performance, and I still went looking at that game saying, well, we're going to have a really big performance. Whether that's going to be good enough for us to win or not, I didn't know, you know, but we weren't to find out because we didn't have a performance. New Zealand were incredibly sharp, incredibly accurate, and we were none of those things.
In retrospect, was it naive, given what had gone before, not just against Japan, but also I'm thinking back to the Six Nations, particularly those games against England and Wales. Was it naive to think that such a performance was in that Ireland team's tank?
Of course it could have been. It could be seen as being naive. I would still say when we look back on what our team had done over the previous couple of years, we had achieved very, you know, great heights. Not just in the wins, but actually in the manner of the wins. You know, some of the performances that we had against top teams were outstanding, and I think this year seems to have been a series of big games that have gone against us. There's the style of rugby has changed, not to one style but to several styles. It all seems to have gone away from us, and all of those styles have been ways that absolutely limit us playing. And we never got up a gallop. I mean, our Six Nations was definitely poor. We got bullied in two of the matches in the Six Nations. I remember talking before the first game that we had against England in the autumn, and my level of expectation for then, even with the heavy training, and I know we'd been heavy training that week, my level of expectation was that we would come out and meet the heavy nature of the English team, the power nature of the English team. We'd meet that with force, even though we'd probably run out of steam because we were peaking at different times, and we didn't meet it with force. We didn't meet it at all. And we seemed to lose confidence from that. We'd lost confidence from the spring, but it just didn't seem to come back. And I actually thought we'd got it right. And for one period of time when we played Scotland at the start, you know, Scotland were awful and stood off us all that time, and maybe that almost more than anything else lulled us into a false sense of security. But we haven't managed to hit an efficient or coherent stream. We got the points we needed to get against Samoa and against Russia, but we didn't set the world alight. And we still, I think, yes, maybe naive, but you still know what these guys have done in the past, and your expectation is, right, you know this is the one. This is the day you meet fire with fire from the off, and we didn't.
Is that the kernel of the problem then? Is that we were relying on what had gone before and not the evidence that was presently in front of us as regards our own players?
Well, I think there's a little bit of that, and there's a little bit. I listened to Matty's part. I'd agree with elements of that and maybe disagree with some, but and that's where we're trying to figure out is where do our opinions lie at the moment. This time last year, we played an All Black team, and I know people say it was the end of their season and blah, 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 but we played an All Black team that was sharp and capable, and we beat them and beat them well. It was a magnificent performance. Their reaction to that was to literally gut the team. Ours was to continue with that team. And a lot of that team were on the far side of 30. And I talked about this immediately after the game. They, you know, for some of those players, I don't know that there is a lot of strength and depth coming up behind them. There wasn't a lot of players saying, pick me, pick me. But our reaction to it was to stay with what we had and maybe not make a big change through it. And that could be the flaw in the whole thing, because New Zealand changed to going faster, putting in two playmakers, dropping one of the best players in the world in Ben Smith from 15 and putting in the twice World Player of the Year out half to 15. You know, we could never countenance Ireland ever doing something like that. But they did it because it felt it gave them more options, and they're playing at a level of pace and accuracy that, you know, is rare to see. So so when I look at the World Cup at the moment, the teams that are a joy to watch, Japan were a joy to watch because they played relentlessly with the most magnificent skills and handling. New Zealand have done the same. And on the flip side of it, England have been entirely heft and power oriented with great skills, but going at a million miles an hour, but really big, heavy carriers and very destructive play. And South Africa have done something similar. South Africa have changed their policy of getting players from back around the world, and they've brought them all back in, made them into a coherent side. They have a style. Ireland's style, just both that power and that handling, I think, puts our style under pressure. And that's where we were when I look back on the World Cup.
Somebody, Peter, one of the texters, put it that, you know, Schmidt found a way to best get results from the group of players that were at his disposal. There's clearly been some disconnect in terms of how Schmidt's approach relates to the players that are at his disposal now, or were at his disposal during the course of the World Cup, and how that approach works in terms of the kind of shifting tectonic plates of world rugby. Like, other teams have evolved and changed. We seem to have got ourselves stuck in a rut. I'm kind of curious to get your view on how you would feel the best, because we all want to see, like, everybody wants to see offloading rugby, and everybody wants to see, you know, fantastic passing stuff. That's just not real world stuff when you take into consideration most squads. I'm just curious as to what your view is on the best style of play that would suit this current Irish squad.
Well, I listened to that. That was, he called in just before the news, Peter, and he compared Joe Schmidt to Jack Charlton. Yeah. And I don't think that's a correct analogy. I think there's elements of that are true. Yes, he got a group of players playing really well together, but these were talented players, and they played and got themselves up to the very top of rugby. It is, for all intents and purposes, 12 months too early. And when the big competition comes along, everybody else has seen what we're able for, has seen what we're very, very good at. And because we were at the top of the tree, or the top two in the tree, everybody was able to pick us off and devised a style. Now, it worked. So it's very hard to put away what works and change it dramatically, because you don't quite know how other teams are going to deal with it. So I think England, because of a variety of injuries, changed entirely the manner in which they played. And they ended up with this incredibly powerful team, and they've stuck with it. And that's the style they're going to play with. And it's bloody effective. There's a great line. I have it here. There's a great line from the West Wing. One of the things in the West Wing, a coach once told me that the hardest thing to do in sports is to walk into your Super Bowl locker room at halftime and change the strategy that got you there, because it's no longer working. You know, and maybe that's part of the reality here, because we just did not fire enough shots in this World Cup. Mm. We really didn't. You know, and maybe it did require something else to change. And I'd also say, and we talked about this after the game, we were shorn of all our players 4 years ago. We blooded an awful lot of guys for this World Cup for 2019. In the last 3 or 4 years, we blooded a lot of players. But whether it was a trust issue or a quality issue, we still played most of the guys from 4 years ago. You know, the guys that were blooded didn't necessarily get in, either because Joe didn't trust them to do the job, or he did trust his existing players that had delivered for him in the past to deliver. And look, we saw what happened on Saturday. It was a flat performance against the best team in the world, and we were brutalized almost.
I don't think it's necessarily everybody's going to lose to the All Blacks. You know, they're the best team in the world, and that happens. I think it's the manner of the defeat. Yeah. I guess is what's up against most people at the moment, and it's fed by the past year that's gone before. One of the things that Matt mentioned before you were on with us was there were slight tweaks and there were slight experiments. The Robbie Henshaw full back against England is one that sticks out. Bringing Sean Klein, parachuting him into the setup late and you know, bombing Devon Toner out of the World Cup setup. It just seems that these tweaks and these, you know, they're almost not tweaks. These are kind of major changes in terms of how they would affect your line out and when bringing Klein in, and how it would affect your back three and bringing Henshaw and putting him back there. It seems that those kind of things came too late in the four-year cycle to have any, A, real impact, and B, to be adopted properly and to work properly going into the World Cup.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I don't think there were big changes. And as I just touched on, I think New Zealand made fairly radical changes to how they set themselves up on the back of that defeat 12 months ago. And I also think England, again, from 12 months ago, made fairly huge changes to how they performed. And I was in the crowd that cold enough day in Lansdowne at the start of the year. And England's performance that day was just so radically different from anything we'd seen from them from 2 or 3 years. And it knocked us totally out of kilter. We never managed to get into the game. And so I feel that the other teams, the really good teams, figured out how to beat us. But so did Japan. And that's, you know, that becomes difficult too. So it's a tough place to be. I think it's a tough place to be for the players. It's a very tough place to be for the coaches. But ultimately, the view was for the first time was to get past the quarterfinals, and we haven't done it. And so for that, it becomes a failure. But I don't see it as being the end of the world. And I think there's a couple of things we need to be thankful for in some respects, that because of Joe Schmidt and because of three Six Nations in titles in 6 years, because of beating New Zealand twice, of having Southern Hemisphere wins, we dared to hope. And to be honest, in times past, we didn't even dare to hope. And maybe that's the bit that's sickening us now, because that's a little bit raw, you know. But I'd rather be in that position than have no hope. I don't take it as all doom and gloom. I'm upset like everybody else. But I think it's over to Andy Farrell now. And he has a big task ahead of him.
Yeah, and our rugby coverage is brought to you in association with Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. On the Farrell point, Keith, like, the word was, and I think it's fairly well known, Joe dealt with everything as regards the Irish rugby team and the provinces beneath that on a really granular level. Like, minutes were managed to the minute in terms of how players were blooded for their provinces. That's a very difficult thing. Although he's been in the setup for the past 3 years, it's a very difficult thing for Andy Farrell to try and emulate, because as soon as you rip that away, you're trying to create those relationships again yourself, and you're trying to have that, I don't know if control is the right word, it's one that's used a lot around Schmidt, but it's definitely somewhat applicable that Farrell needs to have that, you know, ingrained relationship with the players, with the squad, ready to go from the off, really.
Well, I think he has the relationship because he's been there for a few years. He's an incredibly personable guy. I know they rate him very highly. But I don't know. I don't take your premise that he has to do it to the same granular level. I think that's Joe's style.
Okay.
And whatever Andy's style is, and I don't know how you define it. I don't know how he define it. I think it'll be an interesting question to ask him whenever we get a chance. But his view is he'll want to be his man and he'll want to do it his way. And even though Joe Schmidt has delivered a huge amount of success for Irish rugby, It's come at a particular time when we haven't had success in the last little period of time. So we're not going to continue in that exact same way anyway. And I would look back on all the coaches I had with Ireland or at club teams or whatever. Coaches have a different way of looking at things. Joe's way could be absolutely perfect for a lot of the players that play, and it obviously was, and it definitely was over the last number of years, and suited some of the players and the players' personalities incredibly well. But if you have a different coach, what's to say he won't have a different outlook entirely? What's to say he won't want to play more off the cuff, or he wants to look for different types of characters and he doesn't want it to be as organized, you know? And what's to say that that won't be successful either? I give a very simple amateur example. Back in the day with Gary Owen, we had Murray Kidd was our coach, and he was a technical coach when there were very few technical coaches around, and he put a technical program in place and it was excellent. After about 2 years of that, we struggled with it. And the next coach that came in with us, like, we won the All-Ireland League in 92. We won it again in 94 with Andy Leslie as coach. And Andy wasn't a coach at all. He was a man manager and he made everybody feel good about themselves. And we won it again that year. Now, I know that's in an amateur time, but I could tell you similar stories of how each coach has built on back of the work that was done by the previous coach. They don't throw everything out, but they use the parts that suit them and suit their philosophy. So Andy Farrell has never been a head coach, so we don't know exactly what his way is, what his thing is. But if he wants to be his own man and decides to do it in a different way, we're going to see something very different.
It's going to be an interesting dynamic then between him and the squad. If he is going to be his own man and he is going to do things his own way, he is going to have to make changes to the setup that has been there under Schmidt. But he also has to do that while knowing that he was part of the previous regime. And that for a player, I'd imagine, is a very difficult thing to kind of balance. If you're dealing with somebody, if you're used to dealing with somebody in one position and they graduate up to the next step up, you're kind of wondering, I don't know, would there be a difference in dynamic in how the player and the coach gets on in that respect, Keith?
I think there will. And I think the player has to get used to it pretty promptly. You know, the saying is the king is dead, long live the king. You know, the new guy is in, he is the boss. So he was involved in everything. So were the players, by the way. But he would, like, assistant coaches don't get their way always. You know, captains don't get their way always. You know, it's ultimately the boss is the boss. And you try and get your spoke in wherever you can. But I don't know. I'm really upset because, you know, I had big dreams for this World Cup too. I thought we had a really good bunch of players, and I thought we'd be able to get some really good performances. And for me, it was only really about the quarterfinal, and we didn't get a performance in the quarterfinal. So I'm very disappointed with that. And I'm very disappointed for the players too, because I know unbelievably how hard it is on a 4-year cycle. This could be your only chance to play in a World Cup and it doesn't go your way. It's a hard place. It really is a really, really tough place. But now that that's nearly over, I don't have to get over it. I don't have to go into a dark room and try and get over it, you know, because my days of playing are long since past. But I'm now getting kind of my head around to the idea, we're going to have a new coach. What way is he going to coach it? Is it going to be different or radically different from the past? What changes is he going to make? What lessons are you making certain you learn within a 4-year cycle? So I listened to what Matty was saying earlier on, and what I was saying, I disagreed with a couple of things. Six Nations is very important. But what's to say, or what's not to say, that we can't have far more fluidity in the team and still achieve at the Six Nations? I don't think you just throw out everything because you change part of the team. You throw out any chances of winning a Six Nations. I don't believe that has to be the case. So I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen with that. But we do want to make certain that we peak come 2023. You know, we really want to be in a position where we have... New Zealand used to do what we have done. And Joe Schmidt touched on it in his press conference. Maybe the peak was 2018. But New Zealand did that in 07 and 03. They were unbelievably peerless the 2 years prior to both those World Cups. And they've definitely learned their lesson, because they've peaked and won the last two World Cups, and they look like they're peaking at the right time here as well.
Yeah, it's important to remember that we were, you know, whatever about the world rankings, like going that 2018 that we had with the series in Australia, beating the All Blacks at home and going through the Six Nations the way we did. I mean, there's remarkable stuff has been achieved under Joe Schmidt, but we can also, you know, examine why things went as badly wrong as they did during the course of this World Cup. Like, we keep talking about four-year cycles, and we keep talking about that hurdle of the quarterfinal of the World Cup. Is there a danger that, you know, mentally, that that's such a crushing weight now at this stage? Because we've arguably gone through two or three sides, like you mentioned before, we've sent teams to World Cups that necessarily wouldn't have had hope of making quarterfinals, etc. I think the last three World Cups, we can definitely say, and possibly four if you want to go back to 07, we've had teams that should have been reaching quarterfinals and beyond. This is probably the best equipped team we thought to go beyond it. Is there a mental aspect to all this now that's going to take a lot of getting past for Andy Farrell and co?
I think there is a little bit of a mental thing, but I don't know that you can worry about that for the next 3 or 4 years. You need to worry about getting your high level of performance all the time. In this 12-month period of time, we've been up and down, up and down. We haven't had a high level of consistency. I will tell you that, and this is going back into the annals, in 2003, we played Argentina in the World Cup, and it meant we guaranteed going into the quarterfinals. And I can tell you, you know, we'd been knocked out in Lens 4 years previously. And I can tell you that the atmosphere in that ground, that wasn't just from us, the players, it was like playing in porridge. I've never been in anything like it in my life. And we came out on the win. We won by a point or 2 points. But it was about the most stressful day I've ever put down in my life on a rugby field.
I remember the scenes after that. It was one of relief more than anything else.
Well, one of fatigue almost, yeah. You know, it was, and like everybody thought we should just automatically beat Argentina. Argentina had a better pedigree than we had in World Cups, and still have, by the way. And sometimes we kind of forget some of those elements. Look, I hope it's not a mental thing. I hope it's something that we can dig out of, and of course we can. But we have a lot of young players in that squad. And that'll be there in 4 years' time. We'll have an interesting setup. We've a fair chunk of young players coming through the academies. One thing I would say is, on the back of what we've seen in wet and difficult conditions, the magnificence of the handling of some of the teams was in stark contrast to our handling. And I think we need to have a fundamental shift in our handling skills from underage. We really do. We need to get it to be second nature.
Keith, hopefully we'll speak again in cheerier circumstances, but we'll keep the wardrobe no less coordinated. Keith Woods, thanks so much for your time this evening. We'll keep you updated on everything that's going on at Bramall Lane, where it's still scoreless after 28 minutes. Enda Stevens and John Egan among those starting for Sheffield United tonight. David McGoldrick as well. No goals to speak of. Dan will keep us updated on all of that in the football show. And we'll speak to the Bows captain, Derek Pender, as well.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.